Hola, Sol. This morning we'll go straight to meditation, and we have a special guest guiding us in meditation. This is Padmasambhava, by special request. And so, by that I mean that I will simply be reading, I think, verbatim, I'm not sure I'll add anything at all, to his guided meditation on identifying Rigpa. So please find a very comfortable position. We'll go right in. So I will add just a little bit, but as soon as it's Padmasambhava, I'll let you know, so you don't kind of blur Alan Wallace and Padmasambhava, which would be a big mistake. Okay? In the spirit of loving kindness for yourself and all beings, in the quest for an ever deepening experience of genuine happiness, first of all, settle your body in its natural state as you let your awareness descend into the body right down to the ground. Filling the space of the body with your awareness, set your body at ease, in stillness and vigilance. And master the fine art of allowing your respiration to flow in its natural rhythm, utterly unforced, effortless, without restraint of any kind. And for a little while, as you let your awareness continue to permeate the field of the body, simply note the sensations correlated with the in and the outflow of the breath, relaxing deeply with every out-breath as you release the breath, release thoughts, and allow your awareness to come to rest with a sense of ease, of looseness, stillness in the present moment. And manifesting its natural luminosity, illuminating the sensations of the breath. And now, in order to derive the greatest benefit from this guided meditation, release your ordinary conceptualization of the teacher, as valid as it may be, on the relative plane, but with the recognition that there is no inherently existent sentient being from the side of the teacher, dissolve your own construct into emptiness. And from that empty luminosity, invoke Padmasambhava as your teacher, if you will, to guide you in this meditation. These are his words of guidance. Now place your awareness right in the space in front of you, steadily, without modification. Fixedly, without wavering. And clearly, without a meditative object. Oh, now steadily observe this consciousness at the time of placing the mind steadfastly and without modification. Once you have calmed the compulsive thoughts in your mind, right where they are, and the mind is unmodified, isn't there a motionless stability? Oh, this is called shamatha. But it is not the nature of the mind. Now steadily observe the very nature of your own mind that is being still. Is there a resplendent emptiness that is nothing, that is ungrounded in the nature of any substance, shape, or color? That is called the empty essence. Isn't there a luster of that emptiness that is unceasing, clear, immaculate, soothing, and luminous, as it were? That is called the luminous nature. its essential nature is the indivisibility of sheer emptiness, not established as anything, and its unceasing vivid luster. Such awareness is resplendent and brilliant, as it were. So those are Padmasambhava's instructions for the remainder of this session. With the greatest sense of ease, of looseness, of release, rest in the empty and luminous nature of your own awareness, knowing itself. or lasso. So in the context of Vajrayana, more specifically in the context of Dzogchen, if one wishes to practice Guru Yoga, it's important one doesn't do it in a way that will be confusing and misleading. And so when I said, you know, for that particular teaching, don't blur, don't kind of mix together your ordinary sense of the teacher and Padmasambhava, very important. It's especially when one has an extraordinary teacher, someone like His Holiness Dalai Lama, or Dujom Rinpoche, Sakyatisa Rinpoche, Dejan Rinpoche, truly, truly great masters. And one comes to know them, and perhaps comes to very deeply admire them, you know, for their qualities they actually have. Then it's very easy, with this already quite exalted sense or sublime sense of who they are, to then, while holding that conceptualization, then add on, not only is the Dalai Lama incredibly warm-hearted and humble and sweet and intelligent and articulate, and he's also Chenrezig. You know, then you're blurring. And then it's really idolatry. It's simply idolatry. And this is why he's countering that, saying, I'm not Buddha. I'm a simple Buddhist monk. If you're going to look at the Dalai Lama's... Dalai Lama, good. He's a simple Buddhist monk, and he's a very good monk, right? But if you want to develop Guru Yoga, then you dissolve, recognizing that however the Dalai Lama appears to you, to your conventional mind, your ordinary mind, your sentient being mind, however he appears, it's a yumi construct. It's a construct of what is appearing from his side and how you're making sense, how you're interpreting, how you're conceptually imputing. And the Dalai Lama, the person there, is empty of that. Whatever you've been thinking, projecting, even if it's very sublime, he's such a wonderful man, extraordinary, Nobel laureate. You know, that's very exceptional. That man is empty of all of our ordinary imputations. So some people impute him very negatively. People who have a political agenda, people who are coming out of deep fear and paranoia, they superimpose, oh, he is a wolf in sheep's clothing. He's definitely empty of that. And other people think he's a very sweet Tibetan man. He's so sweet. He's empty of that. So however we are conceiving of him with his ordinary mind, you dissolve that into emptiness. And if you wish to practice Guru Yoga with respect to him, then out of emptiness, out of that open, luminous, primordially pure expanse, then he may arise as Avalokiteshvara. And nothing other than Avalokiteshvara. And that's your guru. That's your guru. So, it's kind of important. So let's go back now to the context for these pointing out instructions that Padmasambhava shares with us. Identifying pristine awareness. The instructor, have all your pupils sit in front of you in the posture bearing the seven attributes of Arojana. And then he continues, and this will be now a very brief review. I'll just read through it. Now place your awareness right in the space in front of you, steadily without modification, fixedly without wavering, and clearly without a meditative object. So you're familiar with that. We've done it before. And then he gives commentary on this. What may you experience at that time? Given the differences in intellect, in some, a non-conceptual, unmediated, conceptually unstructured reality will arise in their mind streams. That'd be very cool. So people who are very ripe, they might just slip right into that. In some, there will be a steadiness in awareness. Sounds more like shamatha. In some, there will be a steady and natural luster of emptiness. That is not an emptiness, that is nothing. And there will arise a realization that this is awareness itself. This is pristine awareness itself. It is the nature, the ultimate nature of the mind. So he's suggesting there, some while just resting there, with all that preparation, bear in mind this is so important, especially in the when I say the popularization, this is not a denigration. When I say some people popularize Dzogchen, they're doing a great service. They're going not to be closed-fisted and say, oh, unless you come to our monastery and train for 5 years, I won't talk about Dzogchen. So it's really an expression. I think, you know, when it's done with pure motivation, and I'm sure many of the teachers have that, when they're giving a weekend workshop or a week-long or something like that, and trying to make this accessible, it's really a service, sowing these seeds, right? But here in this context, now we understand some of the preliminaries of building up to this, the gradations of shamatha going from coarse to subtle, to awareness of awareness, your mind settling, really fully settling in its natural state, realizing the substrate consciousness. Having settled there, ascertain the conventional nature of your own awareness. From that vantage point, seeking it out as observing it, seeking it out, probing its nature, ascertaining its empty nature. And then receiving the pointing out instructions. So it's, I think, very helpful, very important to recognize that we can get this in a somewhat decontextualized way. You know, if you're getting a weekend, how can a person give much context? It's a very short time. I've received this also from His Holiness in, the south of France about 10, 11 years ago. I think it was 1 week. 10,000 people showed up, and he spoke about Dzogchen. So he can't give the full context. So it has to focus in. But it's good to have the big context. Then you see the much richer meaning. And you might be able to imagine what would the mind be that could approach this, venture into this practice, and gain fuller realization. So given differences in intellect, what this is not just some people have an IQ of 150 and some people of 110, but rather how prepared are they? How ripe are they? So he's really not talking about just intellect. Some people brighter than others, and then one can say, oh, I only have an IQ of 120, and I think you need 160 for this. I think I'm left out. Oh, bummer. I have to get a new body, a better brain. Okay, big mistake. Right? It's not talking about that. It's talking about the maturation, the ripeness of this. So there are numerous accounts in the sutras. Going back to the Pali Canon, I remember one very famous story. I won't give the whole story. But a person of very limited intellect, intellectually really not very bright, one would have to say. So the Buddha gave him very simple instructions that he could wrap his mind around. It was not confusing. It was not so subtle that he couldn't engage with it. Gave him very simple instructions. And that was sufficient for him to achieve nirvana. Okay? So none of us are left out. That's kind of important. So some, while engaging in this utterly simple practice of just resting unwaveringly with no object, to slip into a non-conceptual, unmediated, conceptually unstructured reality. Emptiness itself. Some there arises. The awareness could be just a conventional sense of awareness. And in some, Rigpa itself. One of the three is bound to arise. One of the three. At least awareness. If you're just resting there, being aware that you are aware, that's something. Big step in the right direction. Right? Oh, Lasso. In some there will arise a steady, natural luster of emptiness that is not an emptiness, that is nothing. And there will arise a realization that this is awareness itself. It is the nature of the mind. In some there will arise a steady clarity or luminosity. So that luminous aspect will rise more predominantly. And in others, a sense of straightforward emptiness. They'll access more just the empty aspect. In some appearances, and the mind will merge. A sense of duality between the awareness being in here and appearances being out there, that will dissolve. And more of a unitive experience of awareness and appearances. Appearances will not be left outside. So there is no longer any outside, and awareness will not be left inside. There is no longer any inside. The words don't mean anything. And there will arise a sense that they've become inseparably equalized. It is impossible that some such kind of experience will fail to occur. So if you're properly prepared, you've been following this step by step, this is truly a path that he's leading. This is not just a bit of practice here, a bit of practice there, but step by step, a sequence of unfolding, of deepening realization. some kind of experience will occur, and then you deepen it. So with that preparation, at that time, the spiritual mentor, the Lama, should provide the following instruction. So this too will be familiar. Oh, now steadily observe this consciousness at the time of placing the mind steadfastly and without modification. So you were just resting there with no object, and now there's that inversion right in upon the awareness that is just resting there. Oh, once you have calmed the compulsive thoughts in your mind right where they are, in other words, they just dissolve into the space of the mind, and the mind is unmodified, it's not structured by hope, fear, and so forth, isn't there a motionless stability? Oh, this is called shamatha, but it is not the nature of the mind. Now steadily observe the very nature of your own mind that is being still. That is, you've recognized the stillness, and that is an attribute. That attribute is shamatha. But now what is that awareness that has this stillness as its attribute? What is still? Now you hone in, you target awareness itself. Is there a resplendent, that is something rather glorious, something luminous, something bright, not flat, not dead, not black? Is there a resplendent emptiness that is nothing, that is ungrounded in the nature of any substance, shape, or color? An emptiness that is nothing. Is he suggesting that emptiness really is nothing at all? The answer is no. Not that. He's already said it, in fact. But nothing, well, nothing relative to what? And in Tibetan, we'd say, Tanya pi loy yuldu ja mirungwa. Tanya pi loy yuldu ja mirungwa. So one of the definitions of something that is existent is lu yuldu ja rungwa. Something that is fit, something that is capable to be an object of the mind. Conventional mind, the dualistic mind, the mind that makes sense of the world. Fit to be an object of the mind. That's what we say exists. So that's what scientists are looking for. They're looking for things that are not merely artifacts, that is just objects of the system of measurement, but actually are measuring something in the world, and it arises, and you can see it, you perceive it, you apprehend it. Likewise, when you're observing your own mind, and you see thoughts, images, you observe dreams, and so forth, all of these are fit, capable of arising as an object to the mind, of this conventional mind, this relative mind. But Rigpa is not capable. Not capable of arising as an object to this conventional mind. You can't say, oh, I've been looking for Rigpa, there it is, like a lost pair of eyeglasses. It's not fit, it's not capable, there's no way for Rigpa to arise as some object of your mind. Then there would be two rikpas. There's the rikpa and, oh, there's the rikpa, like some looking at a pea in the palm of your hand. Oh, that's rikpa. No hole, no way. So as the ordinary mind, this conventional, relative, dualistic mind, is looking around, looking, where's rikpa? I'm trying to find rikpa. You'll never find it. Right? It is not capable of being object for this mind that's looking for it. Your mind, your conventional relative mind, must dissolve. It needs to dissolve into the substrate consciousness. And the substrate consciousness needs to dissolve into Rigpa, and then Rigpa can know itself, but it doesn't know itself as an object. And therefore, it's said to be nothing, a not object, a no thing, a no thing. Yeah? That's important. So is there a resplendent emptiness? Resplendent means a resplendent emptiness. Obviously, it can't be something that doesn't exist at all, but it doesn't exist as an object to the ordinary mind. Therefore, it's resplendent and it's empty. And it's ungrounded in the nature of any substance. It's not anything tangible, has no shape, no color. That is called the empty essence. Isn't there a luster of that emptiness? Not just a vacuity. Isn't there a luster of that emptiness that is unceasing? Clear, immaculate, soothing, and luminous, as it were. That is called the luminous nature. So those are the two central features, of course, of Rigpa. It's empty essence and its luminous nature. its core, its essence is empty, its manifest nature. It's ngo and ranshin. Tombe ngo and esewe ranshin. Its essential nature, empty, but its manifesting nature, its luminosity. Its essential nature is the indivisibility of sheer emptiness that is not established as anything, so a sheer emptiness, and its unceasing vivid luster. Such awareness is resplendent, again, bright and brilliant, as it were. So hence the word clear light, innate mind of clear light. Beyond the substrate consciousness, beyond the brightness of the coarse mind, of course. This present unmoving consciousness, which cannot be directly expressed in words, is given the name awareness, or pristine awareness. That which thinks is this alone, so it is given the name mind, or sem. So let's go back to Guru Yoga, Dalai Lama and Avalokiteshvara. If one is really practicing, immersed in Vajrayana practice, practicing Vajrayana, Guru Yoga. Okay, Dalai Lama, this 75-year-old wonderful man, and Avalokiteshvara, embodiment of enlightened compassion. Are they the same? Are they simply one? In other words, is Avalokiteshvara 75 years old? And a Tibetan, by the way, with good English, but not that good English. You know, a little bit faulty English. As he says, my broken English. You know? They can't be just one. Doesn't make any sense. Because then he's only where he is. Avalokiteshvara then localized. Where's Avalokiteshvara now? Oh, he just got on a plane to Japan. That's where he is. Oh, bummer. I was hoping he would come to Thailand. Well, we'll have to wait until he leaves Japan. Oh, but he can't come to Thailand. Oh, bummer. Avalokiteshvara is blocked from coming to Thailand. The Chinese communist government must be very powerful if they can block Avalokiteshvara. Must be more powerful than Buddha. So to say one and the same, it doesn't make any sense. But then you say, oh, no, I get it. It's this very, very kind man, 75-year-old man. And then there's Avalokiteshvara someplace else. They're really different. That's all very well. You're welcome to think that. But then it's not Guru Yoga. Then it's just you really like this old man, and then maybe you're taking refuge in Avalokiteshvara. But then that's not Guru Yoga. That's simply taking refuge in Avalokiteshvara. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's not Guru Yoga. And it misses the whole point of Guru Yoga. So not simply the same and not simply different. And likewise, when it comes to Rigpa, pristine awareness, non-local, beyond the three times, unmoving, is it the same as your mind? In which case, oh, then Rigpa is so easy to realize. All you have to do is sit down and practice settling the mind for about 5 seconds. Oh, I realize Rigpa. There it is. But then it doesn't liberate. Bummer. So it can't be the same. Just one and the same. But then if you think, oh, of course mind is over here, and Rigpa is something special, something else, something radically other, then you've missed it. Not the same? God, it's ranjin ki chikmai, ranjin ki tadimai. So they're not inherently the same, one and the same, simply identical, right? But nor are they by nature utterly distinct. They are of the same nature. Viewed from one side, you see, oh, it's a wonderful man. Viewed from another side, no one there besides Avalokiteshvara, of the same nature. Not inherently the same, not inherently different. And likewise for mind, your mind, your dualistic mind that comes out with so many thoughts, your unruly mind that you find so difficult to tame, that goes up and down and up and down, up and down. Right? That mind. If it's Rigpa, then Rigpa kind of sucks. If that's all Rigpa is, who needs it? Who needs Rigpa when you got a mind? And the mind's not that great. It's been throwing us around in samsara for beginningless time. And yet if you're thinking, oh, I have to look someplace else for Rigpa, just like I have to look someplace else for Buddha, then you're mistaken. So, not inherently the same, not inherently simply the unitive, so same point as with Yen earlier, not inherently different, radically separate, other separate substances, but of the same nature. In that sense, then, your mind is none other than Rigpa, this ordinary mind that is spewing out thoughts, emotions, hopes and fears, mental afflictions. nothing other than Rigpa, pristine awareness. It is this that is mindful of all kinds of things. So it is given the name mindfulness. Again, of the same nature as mindfulness. It's not identical to mindfulness. It's not inherently different from mindfulness. While it is not seen, this Rigpa, you can't see it as an object. It is a special seeing. It is a special seeing that is clear, steady, unmediated. Conceptually unmediated. And steadfast. So it is given the name insight or vipassana. It is that that makes distinctions among all specific phenomena, like separating the layers of a mushroom. So it is given the name discerning wisdom. It's none other than Rigpa. All terms such as Sugatagarbha, the womb of the Sugatas, the womb of those who have gone to bliss, synonym of Buddha nature, or Tathagatagarbha, all such terms as Sugatagarbha, the soul quintessence, Tikle Nyakchik, absolute space, Dhammadhatu, primordial consciousness, in Tibetan, Yeshe, the middle way, Uma, Umelam, ultimate truth, Mahamudra, Mahasandhi is the Sanskrit of Dzogchen, and emptiness are names of this alone. That is, these are not other than this Rigpa. They are facets of Rigpa. They are identical to Rigpa. They are not other than Rigpa. This steadfast awareness exists. Ah, so it does exist. So it is that which sees form with the eyes, experiences sound with the ears, smells with the nose, tastes with the tongue, and so on. So interesting. Awareness has a lot of work to do. It's right there in the midst of our daily experience. It is nothing other than Rigpa that's perceiving all the forms, the appearances that we apprehend. So it must exist if it's doing all that work. A non-entity can't do that. All the experiences of such things are just this clear consciousness, just this clear conscious awareness of the present. However, since we have this, and it variously appears as dislike, attachment, hatred, and so on, and because it knows, remembers, and is aware, we are given the name sentient being. So all of these activities of the mind, including even mental afflictions such as attachment and hatred, these are nothing other than, and they never have been anything other than displays of Rigpa. And as we identify with them, as we enter into cognitive fusion, or Dzimba, with them, then we identify ourselves, we identify others as sentient beings. Although there is constant direct mindful awareness, it does not recognize itself. We're aware of all kinds of things. We go out for a walk, we eat, we meditate. We're aware of all kinds of appearances, objects to the mind, so much, an ongoing, vast, diverse display of appearances. But it does not recognize itself. And that is given the name, this failure to recognize its own nature. Rigpa, not knowing itself, is called Ma-Rigpa. Ma-Rigpa, or inborn ignorance. Hlengiki Ma-Rigpa. It's innate. It's inborn. You didn't acquire it from someplace else. It is awareness unaware of itself, hence Ma-Rigpa, not Rigpa. How is it ignorant? In what fashion is it unaware? Because ignorance simply means unaware. Although this eye sees everything out there, it does not reflexively see itself. So true enough. It sees everything, one can say, except for itself. Likewise, the mind does not see, does not know, and does not cognize itself, so this is called ignorance or unawareness. Consciousness that appears to itself is called pristine awareness and primordial consciousness. In short, it is just this clear, steady consciousness that is ordinarily, naturally present right now. So sometimes it's called tamelkishepa, tamelkishepa, ordinary consciousness. When you start thinking, oh, I must look in some other realm, some transcendent place, some really deep place. I must look elsewhere. It's got to be some, got to be around here someplace. I just haven't looked carefully enough. Then the teachings come in. This is tamelkishepa. It is just that ordinary consciousness. When you fathom its nature, it's nothing other than Rigpa, pristine awareness. Just this clear, steady, or this luminous, still consciousness that is ordinarily, naturally present right now. In other words, Rigpa is not something that happens later on when you gain high realization after you've achieved shamatha, after you've achieved vipassana, and some great lama gives you pointing out instructions. It's not waiting for you. It's where you are right now. It is not grounded in the nature of any shape or color, so it is free of the extreme of substantialism. Mubhutali, mubhutali deva. There's no substance to it. There's nothing to it. While it is non-existent, so non-existent exactly in the meaning explained earlier, non-existent in the sense that it is not capable of becoming an object of the mind that is determining this exists, this doesn't exist. Conventional mind, relative mind, dualistic mind. In that context, it doesn't appear. Therefore, the ordinary mind would say it doesn't exist. I saw one of the most ludicrous little film clips somebody sent me of a new movie just come out, some film has just come up called The Nature of Existence. And a very fine scientist, but a man who is not a fine thinker when it comes to issues of spirituality. I'll leave it at that, because I'm not interested in denigrating people, but I have no problem at all in denigrating ignorance. And this is ignorance. So this world-renowned scientist, there is no evidence whatsoever for the existence of God any more than there is of fairies and unicorns. That was, I have spoken. What bullshit? What does he know? Since I'm not referring to any person that you there's no way you can guess who I am. There's plenty of people this could be. Happen to be one person, but who cares what that one person is? It's not a point of denigrating or putting down one person and his tragic, close-minded ignorance, which is really like buffoonery. It's so idiotic. So what is he saying? He's saying, I as a scientist, knowing the range of sciences, of biological sciences, physical, chemistry, brain science, and so forth, we scientists, of course, having the only way of apprehending anything that is real, we have come up with no evidence whatsoever for the existence of God, any more than we have discovered fairies or unicorns, and therefore their God doesn't exist. And anybody who thinks he does is an idiot. And that is this person's core premise. What a joke. All you've shown is just how narrow-minded you are and clinging just like some tight-fisted, close-minded religious fundamentalist that we have the only way. It's the Bible, it's the Quran, it's the Dhammapada, it's the Bhagavad Gita, it's the Tao Te Ching. We have the only way, the only way. Yeah. I guess Christ doesn't exist either, because I've seen no evidence for the existence of Christ in any of the Buddhist, core Buddhist texts. So I guess Christ doesn't exist. Jesus doesn't exist. That's the point. But he's pointing out that from this conventional mind, God doesn't arise as an object, and therefore he deems him non-existent. So it's very much like this. But then if this person would then recognize that for all of its marvels, its excellences, its great value of these multitude of scientific ways of knowing, clearly that they don't need any defense, so useful. But there are other ways of knowing that are completely outside of the parameters of the scientific method, and this is how we know, for example, that another person loves us. in a spousal relationship, how do you know that your spouse loves you? Do you have some good scientific evidence? You know, she smiles at me a lot. Hookers do that. They want your money. You know, she takes care of me when I'm ill. That's what nurses do. Point to any evidence you have that your spouse or a very dear friend or your own mother loves you, and I can give you an alternative explanation that's perfectly feasible and indicating there is no evidence whatsoever that your mother loves you or your spouse loves you. So sorry, but there's no evidence that your spouse loves you. Yeah. That's just putting on like, that's like poking out one of your eyes. All right. There's no evidence that there's three-dimensional anything, having just stuck a stick in your eye. So it's unfortunate when people turn something so magnificent as science and turn it into a closed-minded dogma. It's really quite tragic for science, above all, and everybody who's duped by thinking that's the only possible way of knowing anything. And it's real foolishness. It's unscience, because science is knowledge. That's unknowledge. That's ignorance. Oh, yeah. So it's non-existent. While it is non-existent to scientific inquiry, I don't think there will ever be scientific corroboration, some glorious scientific evidence, some research project that will then appear on the front page, New York Times or Scientific American. The scientists at the University of such and such have now determined RCVA exists. Never. Doesn't lend itself to that type of inquiry. So, for that, from that perspective of that kind of inquiry, or simply the perspective of dualistic mind, RCVA is non-existent. There's no evidence for it. While it is non-existent, it is, from its own side, that is, when you are viewing RCVA from the perspective of RCVA, which is the only way you can view RCVA, it is steady, clear, natural luminosity that is not created by anyone, so it is free of the extreme of nihilism. Chepeta. So we're coming right back to the same point, the eight extremes. So, mupertali depa, free of the extreme of substantialism, it's really there. And then chepetali depa, it's beyond, transcends the extreme of nihilism or annihilation. It did not originate from a certain time. So there was no point prior to which RCVA wasn't there, and then afterwards it was. It did not originate from a certain time, nor did it arise from certain causes and conditions. So it is free of the extreme of birth. Kyeweta le deva. So there's no point it arises. And this is the Buddha's own teachings in that Pali source that I cited earlier. It's unborn and unceasing, referring to the consciousness of an arhat after death. So it is free of the extreme of birth. It does not die. There's no point at RCVA just kind of keels over, vanishes. The mind does not die or cease at a certain time, so it is free of this extreme of cessation. Gakpe tali deba. While it is non-existent, so now you know what that means, its unimpeded creative power appears in all manner of ways, so it is free of the extreme of singularity or unity, of being one thing. If it's just one thing, then it can't manifest as everything. The tremendous array of appearances arising in samsara and nirvana. It arises as bumblebees, as smog, as dirt, as butterflies, as thoughts, images, appearances, and so forth. It manifests in all manner of ways, so there's no possible way it can just be one thing. Otherwise, all those appearances would have to be the same. Of course, they are not. So it is, oh yeah, chike tali deva. It's beyond the extreme of being unitive, a single thing. Although it appears in various ways, it is liberated without having any inherent nature. So it is free of the extreme of multiplicity. It's not really all those appearances. Thus it is called the view that is free of extremes. RCVA itself is the view. To view reality from the perspective of RCVA, that is the view. Meditation is just sustaining that view. And the way of life is cultivating a way of life that helps you sustain the view of Rigpa. And that view is one that is free of these eight extremes of drepe ta get dandelwa in Tibetan. Free of the eight extremes of conceptual proliferation, the classifications, the categories that the mind conjures up and with which it tries to make sense of the world. Does it exist? Does it not exist? Does it arise? Does it cease? Is it really one thing or is it really multiple things? And there's another one. There's a somewhat sometimes different list. Does it come? Does it go? All of these it's free of. It is said to be free of bias and partiality. So it does not slip off into any extreme, any partiality. This alone is called the mind of the Buddha. The mind of a sentient being, that which becomes a Buddha, that which wanders in the cycle of existence, and that which experiences joy and sorrow, are all this alone. So from the perspective of Rigpa, there is no difference between the mind that is manifesting as that of a sentient being and the mind that is manifesting as the mind of a Buddha. They are one of the one nature, Buddha nature. If this did not exist, if there were no Rigpa, there would be no one to experience samsara or nirvana or any joy or and sorrow, which would imply a comatose extreme of nihilism. Were there no Rigpa, there would be nothing at all. There wouldn't be any dead universe that's just getting colder and colder as the Big Bang expands off into a cold, bland, homogeneous deadness. Because as I speak these words, something comes to mind. But if there were no mind, nothing would come to mind. Nothing can be deemed existent without Rigpa. Of course, many people think, materialists all think, of course there's something without Rigpa. The whole physical universe, it doesn't give a darn. The universe does, if we anthropomorphize the universe, it doesn't give a darn whether there's any human beings or whether there's awareness or consciousness. It's just, it is what it is. Where is that physical universe? It exists in the minds of those people who believe in it. And it's conjured up as if we're magicians out of the information that brilliant scientists using ingenious systems of measurement, they gain information from their wide variety of modes of observation, of measurement. They gain information. All of that information being about the about what they think is the physical world. I mean, they're all measurements of physical phenomena. They get the information, and then we conjure up these pictures. The Big Bang, the inflationary period, the formation of galaxies, the expanding space-time, the universe getting colder and colder, bigger and bigger and bigger. And all of that is a picture conceived by the human mind based upon information that we glean from systems of measurement that have been devised by the human mind. With no human mind, with no mind, there aren't any systems of measurement. With no systems of measurement, there's no information. Without somebody being informed, there's no information. And without any information, there's no vision of what this objective physical universe must be like. So it's all like a magician's trick, where we conjure up something, and then we think it's really out there. This alone has been created by no one, but it is self-arisen. And Gyatro Rinpoche made a strong point of this, Rangjung in Tibetan. He said, when it says self-arisen, it doesn't mean that it's kind of like in Nagarjuna. Does it arrive from self, from other, from both, for neither? Dimade. Ranglekepa dimade. Rangjung. It's not so much that it arises, because if it arises, then we've just refuted everything that was said before. It does not arise. There was no point prior to which it occurred. It is unborn. So in that way, it's not arising from itself or anything else. So this word rangjung, which literally means self-arising and naturally arising, he said what it really means is it's just naturally present. It's just naturally present. That's whenever you see this, and you may read other texts on Dzogchen, whenever you see self arising with respect to Rigpa, you should know it's not that it's arising out of itself. Because again, all kinds of logical problems. If it's arising out of itself, what does it need to arise for? It's already there. Rang le kyeba yena and rang yu yu bade. Tene kye mo gore. Yu tsare. Tene choyo mare. And so if it's if we're taking this in the context of logic, there's nothing that's self-arising, because if it's already there, it doesn't need to arise. So then it would be two of them, the self and then that, which doesn't make any sense. No, this means it's just naturally present. Naturally present. Self-arising. Naturally present. So it is self-arisen in the sense of naturally present. It is primordial, spontaneous. Shundup. Tibetan. So it is called primordial consciousness. Such awareness as this does not originate from the profound instructions of a spiritual mentor. So if you'd find some great, truly accomplished Dzogchen master, someone like Yang Tenorbache or others, Tushik Rinpoche, there are a few others, and this person gives you pointing out instructions, and perhaps if you're very ripe and the Lama is giving you these pointing out instructions right there in the presence of the Lama, you may have some opening, some breakthrough, some glimmering of the nature of Rigpa. And especially when they use words like mind-to-mind transmission, the Yang Dhanabhaja is now transmitted to you his own immediate realization of Rigpa. You might think, oh, thank you. Thank you so much. I didn't have any Rigpa, and you just transmitted you, like throwing me a baseball. Thank you so much. Not like that. So it does not originate from the profound instructions of a spiritual mentor, nor does it originate from your sharp intelligence. It's just one of those things, unlike special theory of relativity, unlike the mathematics of quantum cosmology and the Mona Lisa and many other wonderful creations of the human mind, this isn't one of those. Primordially and originally, the natural character of the mind itself exists just like that. But previously it has been obscured by inborn ignorance, so you do not recognize it or ascertain it. You are not satisfied and you do not believe. So, as a good warning, it's a good warning in our simple practice, which you've now all been repeatedly exposed to. And that is just awareness of awareness, which we can do right now. And as you rest there with utter sense of ease, simply knowing what was already present before you directed your awareness to it, that is just the awareness of awareness. You should be satisfied. Don't keep on second guessing. I should be doing more. What's my posture like? I think I should go deeper. It should be more luminous. It should be something more than this. This is ordinary. This is really ordinary. I mean, where's the bliss? This isn't luminous. It's just being awake. Be satisfied. And see what unfolds. Very easy not to be satisfied. And then to think, oh, this isn't working. This isn't working. It's probably me. But maybe that California hippie doesn't really know what he's talking about. I should find a better teacher. He could bring me to much faster. Could be. So until now you've remained in confusion, but now grant it. Grant this Rigpa to the master of wealth. Grant Rigpa to Rigpa. Know your own nature, know your own flaws. That is called identifying the mind. If the mind is empty in the sense of being nothing or primordially non-existent, who creates the one who wanders in the cycle of existence and who experiences suffering? So, who's experiencing all the ups and downs? Man, how many times have I heard that one over the last 7.5 weeks? How's your week gone? Up and down, up and down. Who's experiencing all the ups and downs from week to week, from lifetime to lifetime? Nothing other than Rigpa. Who experiences suffering? Nothing other than Rigpa. Once one has become a Buddha, whence arises, or from where arises the primordial consciousness of knowledge, the compassion of mercy, and the enlightened activity of deeds. All those are experienced and created solely by this steadfast awareness that is indivisible clarity. Again, the word clarity equally means luminosity. Awareness, which equally means knowing. And emptiness. So these same words, so important to recognize this, these same words, clarity, luminosity, awareness or knowing, emptiness, vacuity, these appear on multiple levels. Same words. They don't have a special set of words. Same words get recycled. Recycled, right? And so luminosity, as you're settling the mind in its natural state, and you experience that wakefulness, that clarity, that brightness. That's luminosity. As you experience that knowing awareness, that is knowing, that's awareness. As you're resting there, for example, in settling the mind in its natural state, and you're aware of just this expanse, this spaciousness, this emptiness, this emptiness that is, in a manner of speaking, like the nest for your own awareness, just an openness. So all of these terms, luminosity, awareness, and openness, they can be right there in shamatha land. Okay, those words are appropriate. They are well used, appropriately used. They mean something. They have reference in the experience of practicing shamatha, let alone achieving shamatha. When you're meditating, as we had in the earlier section, of searching for, engaging in the search for the mind, then once again, as you're experiencing this, you may experience a sense of luminosity, the emptiness, the knowing, and you're realizing empty nature of the mind. And that's simply emptiness. The same words are used, and here they're used again with respect to Rigpa. So once again, if one is getting just a quick course, and this happens a lot, a quick course on Dzogchen, and one hears these words, one can take this home and sit down and start practicing, just kind of being just open. Say, ah, I experience that emptiness, and there's nothing in here. There's no, it's just when I'm just present, there's no one who is present. There's no thing. There's no entity that is aware. So I think I just got emptiness. And everything is just manifesting. Everything is expression of clarity. I'm getting luminosity. And when I'm good, when the mind is uncluttered, the stillness. Wow, it's cool. I'm a Dzogchen practitioner. I'm realizing Rigpa. Yeah. You're not realizing something other than Rigpa. But if you're realizing Rigpa, you just see that your whole world has rocked from the root. That's not happening, then you're experiencing Rigpa but veiled by many, many other things, like subtle mind and coarse mind. So all those experiences of samsara and nirvana, they're all experiencing created solely by this steadfast awareness. This steadfast awareness, steadfast means eternal. But even more than eternal, it's out of time, it's beyond time, it's primordial. That is indivisible clarity, awareness, and emptiness. The phrase, the stainless soul eye of primordial consciousness, refers to this. The phrase is, in an instant all phenomena are penetrated and held by great wisdom. And the variety of phenomena with form arise from the mind refer to this alone. So those are Padmas and Bhavas pointing out instructions. And Rigpa, of course, he returns to this in many other texts, but this was something we could actually do in just a few days. And so big advantage to succinctness, to conciseness. So let's spend, rather than just kind of tapping on some, adding on some question and answers and kind of diffusing what we've done for the last hour, 20 minutes, let's just spend the remaining minutes, there's only a few, And let's practice Donglen. As you breathe in and arouse this heart of compassion, you may, if you wish, arouse the yearning that all beings may be free of the darkness of unawareness, the darkness of not knowing who they are, knowing the nature of their own awareness. Imagine drawing in this darkness and extinguishing it in the radiance of light at your heart. In the very instant that you know who you are, that you recognize your own nature, you are free in that moment. And with each out-breath, as you imagine rays of light blazing forth from your heart, arouse this heart of loving-kindness aspiring that each sentient being may come to know the luminosity, the awareness, the emptiness of their own minds, and discover the meaning of innate bliss. And imagine that each one is free. And each one awakens to their own true nature. from this facsimile of the perspective of Rigpa, you may have a deepening of insight into the meaning of Shantideva's verse. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, so long shall I remain to alleviate the suffering of the world. With awareness that illuminates all phenomena, but does not enter into them. And let's bring the session to a close. Yeah. Well, that's